You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
What's five in my parts? It's part five of...
Hey, look here. What's up, five?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Which is actually gang talk,
mm-hmm.
Which is quite a stretch, but anyway.
A little bit. But yeah. This is our fifth part of what I am now calling Crack Week. CIA Week? I don't know. None of them are quite perfect, but that's what we're calling it in this episode. We'll see what titles we come up with.
That's a very cash money of you, Robert.
Thank you, Sophie.
Especially, yes.
It's quite cash money of you to recognize that. So... Well, all
so okay. Embarrassing.
Oh,
I can't.
My God, Robert.
We just got through with Iran-Contra. But while Iran-Contra was spinning up, I want to get to another thing that's happening.
Also, if you're on here and you're listening to this thinking it's part three, this is actually part five, and you need to go over to listen to the Hood Politics episodes, which you can find in this feed and the Hood Politics feed. So
that's right.
Not finding it, then you're wrong.
So while all of the shit we just talked about in your show was happening, Ollie North is also doing more shit of his own, and he has moved on from Iranian money to finding a new way to fund his Contra buddies, Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega. Now, Ooh-wee. Manuel had been a friend of the CIA's for a while. He and George H.W. Bush are good buddies. He had been running cocaine through his, obviously, Panama. Pretty good port, right? Pretty good port.
Yeah. Yes. Now, another cultural touch point here. You guys know the Drink Champs podcast with DJ Envy and Nori, mm-hmm. who was a legendary Queens rapper, right? Nori's name is Noriega.
Right.
He's referring to this dude.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So there's another little touch point here. Also, I think it's important as the listeners, if this feels a little like the way that this series went, a little like chaotic and kind of, you know, not very linear, and you're hearing parts and pieces here and there. Imagine living it. This is exactly how it felt.
Because all of this shit is breaking at different times. For example, in 1986, June of 1986, the Times publishes an expose on the dictator's illicit money laundering and drug activities. They cite an unnamed White House source who claims, quote, the most significant drug running in Panama was being directed by General Noriega. Now, Manuel starts to face legal consequences after this point, including a ban on selling arms to the Panamanian Defense Forces, like an international ban. So while Iran-Contra is breaking and all of this shit's going nuts and the Reagan administration is battening down, He sends a guy into Washington to try to get help. And I'm going to quote next from a write-up in the National Security Archive. Oliver North, who met with Noriega's representative, described the meeting in an August 23, 1986 email message to Reagan National Security Advisor John Poindexter. "You will recall that over the years, Manuel Noriega in Panama and I have developed a fairly good relationship," North writes before explaining Noriega's proposal. "If U.S. officials can help clean up his image and lift the ban on arms sales to the Panamanian Defense Force, Noriega will take care of the Sandinista leadership for us." So North is telling Poindexter that Noriega can assist with sabotaging the Sandinistas and carrying out assassination operations. And his suggestion is we should pay Noriega, who's under an arms embargo by us, $1 million from those Project Democracy funds raised by the sale of U.S. arms for Iran, to get the Panamanian dictator's help in destroying Nicaraguan economic installations. So this causes a big old debate within the Reagan inner circle. Highlights include Poindexter saying he has nothing against Noriega other than his illegal activities. Poindexter's like, well, aside from the crimes, he's great. If he weren't doing all those crimes, we'd love him.
I mean, he's pretty cool, aside for the fact that he's a criminal. But besides that, I mean, cool. Yeah.
Now, Alan Fiers, who is one of the CIA agents who's heavily involved in everything happening in Latin America, is against the idea of arming one of the biggest drug lords in the area with illegal arms deal cash. And Fiers actually may be one of these guys who's kind of kept in the dark specifically so he'll say the right thing when he gets questioned later and seem honest, right? Like that's one of the guys Fiers is, I think. But everyone ignores. So Fiers does say, like, I don't think giving Noriega $1 million is good. He is ignored. Nobody follows his advice.
Not
North meets with Noriega in London with the support of Elliot Abrams, John Poindexter, and George Shultz. So Shultzy, who's not on board Iran-Contra so much, is like, but giving $1 million to Manuel Noriega sounds like a great plan.
It seems a little cleaner.
I'm like, going to go do Shultz, this.
Yeah, and Shultz is like, this is a little cleaner. Like, mm-hmm. This one got too many moving parts. I'm not against paying foreign people to murder and get drugs. I'm not against that. I'm just saying yours
Let's
too
be smarter about it. I am George Shultz. This is the call that Shultz makes right before deciding to one day become the board of directors for a fake blood testing company. fucking George Shultz. Noriega.
What a fizzling out, man. You were just running. You were running contraband across multiple continents. Yeah. Bro, man. You should have retired in a blaze of glory.
So Noriega agrees to attack airports, electric and telephone systems in Nicaragua on the Contras' behalf. And again, part of the deal is that he's going to get some cash money. Part of the deal is that everyone's going to be chill about his continuing moving cocaine through his ports, right? So things are going great for all of this until in November of 1986, we get the actual Iran-Contra story breaks, right? And you know, everything that we talked about at the end there happens. And one of the things that's happening, like, kind of in the wake of this, obviously the big deal, as we've talked about earlier, the big deal is that the United States was illegally selling missiles to Iran in exchange for hostages and then lied about it, right? That's the big deal, right?
Yes.
That's what people get in fucking trouble for.
Yes.
But the other thing that's happening is the Iran-Contra deal is tied to everything else that Ollie and the CIA and the NSC are doing in Nicaragua and all this cocaine that keeps getting into the fucking United States. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but Ronald Reagan makes a bit of an impact for himself as an anti-drug crusader.
That's
right?
Kind of his thing.
So
yeah,
there are some people, you would think that this would have been a bigger deal, but the fact that missiles are involved, that's the sexier thing. The Ayatollah is involved, right? So that's what gets all the attention. But there is a little bit of understanding at the time from some people in the media that, like, kind of seems like the bigger story here is all the fucking cocaine you guys were letting into the country, right? Kind of seems like that might be a real big goddamn deal.
Kind of feel like there's a lot of leads here. Yeah. I feel like you might be burying one of them.
You guys, the missiles and stuff's important. You guys work on that. I'm going to ask these questions. And there's a guy, a journalist, who does decide during a press conference to ask, like, hey, are there any connections between these Contras that you were apparently funding with missile money and drug smuggling? People bringing cocaine to the United States? And this guy gets screamed down, not by the press secretary, but by the New York Times correspondent standing next to him who says, why don't you ask a serious question?
Bro, if you're on the lectern...
Love that the New York Times keeps coming up in this.
Yo, if you're on the lectern and the New York Times... and that somebody lobs that question... and then someone else in the audience shuts it down like that, the the relief that must shoot over your body at that moment. Like, oh my God, that is, I don't know if there's a better example of dodging a bullet, you know?
Yeah.
And like you're just thinking, bro, if this fool knew, I would buy him whatever he wanted tonight.
Oh boy. Like, the New York Times really got me out of a sticky one.
You really got me out of this one, dog. I owe you a Rolex,
And
homie. Yeah.
They're going to help out a lot with the moral panic over the crack epidemic, too. So they really just working hand in glove with our friends in the CIA. Well, kind of. So, obviously, there are some criticisms at the time about the fact that there are very clearly, and this is revealed by the stuff that comes out during Iran-Contra. One of the things that we get because of Iran-Contra is Ollie North's diary, where he's like, helped some cocaine get into the U.S. today. Hoop-de-doo. So I found a wonderful 1988 write-up in the Middle East Report by Jonathan Marshall, which is a contemporary. 88 is kind of the year a lot of this is blowing up, which summarizes, you know, we have the committee that investigates Iran-Contra. Marshall in this is summarizing what the committee found and what it didn't. Quote, the most glaring operational embarrassment neglected by the report is the role of drug trafficking in financing the Contras and the logistic operation that supplied them. The only mention of drugs comes in a staff memo reprinted in a report appendix that rejects media exploited allegations of Contra drug trafficking as improbable and unverifiable. Yet other congressional investigators have condemned the memo as a fraudulent misrepresentation of the facts. Ample and convincing evidence points to the existence of a Guns for Drugs network that brought cocaine and marijuana into the United States as the price of running arms down to Central America. The Joint Committee itself heard testimony from three government witnesses that high-ranking Iran-Contra leaders trafficked in cocaine. Indeed, the committee introduced into evidence a letter from Rob Owen, North's emissary to Central America, mentioning a Contra supply chain used at one time to run drugs and part of the crew that had criminal records. Nice group of boys the CIA chose.
I love it.
The report's silence on the involvement of terrorists in North's Project Democracy is no less deafening. One of the logistics agents employed in the Contra cause was the Cuban exile and career CIA officer Luis Posada. He came to Central America in 1985 after breaking out of a Venezuelan jail where he had been held for conspiring to bomb a civilian Cuban jet in 1976. That act, the worst terrorist crime ever committed in the Western Hemisphere, killed all 73 passengers, including Cuba's national fencing team. Yet the report mentions Posada only in passing, and then by his operational code name, Ramon Medina. Just to give you an idea of the kind of folks who's Ollie's running drugs with. Yeah, this guy who blew up a civilian airliner. Cool dude.
Yeah.
Now, the Iran-Contra investigation and report plunges the Reagan White House into its darkest hours. Public opinion falls through the fucking floor. And again, we talked about this a little bit, but like, yeah, this is the first time he's dealing with like some serious shit. And a bunch of different stuff comes out of the fallout, which we've talked about in your episodes. But one of the things that happens is that while the Reagan White House is in disarray, his opponents in Congress start digging up other stuff, too, that's been going on during his two terms in office. And one of the things they start to look at increasingly is this connection between CIA operations in Latin America and drugs. And one thing people who are interested in this find is a 1985 article by Associated Press journalists Robert Perry and Brian Barger. Perry and Barger had published an investigation. This is the very first public evidence that the Contras and the CIA were moving fucking drugs into the United States, which found that Contra groups had, quote, engaged in cocaine trafficking in part to help finance their war against Nicaragua. The article hadn't made much of a splash because, according to the Columbia Journalism Review, Reagan's people carried out a behind-the-scenes campaign to attack the professionalism of the AP reporters and, quote, discredit all reporting on the Contras and drugs. That's what the CIA wrote at the time.
Yeah.
Peter Kornbluh, writing for the Columbia Journalism Review, notes that whether the campaign was the cause or not, coverage was minimal. So the fact that all this is happening is not like pay attention to that, the way they go after these journalists and the way their goal is, we have to discredit reporting on this.
Yeah.
And also pay attention to the fact that when this first comes up in public in 88, it's a New York Times journalist who, as far as we know, without any CIA advocacy, shuts down a line of questioning on it.
Yes.
That's going to be relevant later.
Yes.
So in 1988, the last year of the Reagan administration, Senator John Kerry does a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee report. He's the guy running it. They publish a report on specifically how covert support for the Contras undermined the war on drugs, right? So this does get looked into. And I'm going to quote from the National Security Archive. The Kerry subcommittee did not report that U.S. government officials ran drugs, but rather that Mr. North, then on the National Security Council staff at the White House and other senior officials, created a privatized Contra network that attracted drug traffickers looking for cover for their operations, then turned a blind eye to repeated reports of drug smuggling related to the Contras, and actively worked with known drug smugglers such as the Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega to assist the Contras. The report cited former Drug Enforcement Administration head John Lawn as testifying that Mr. North himself had prematurely leaked the DEA undercover operation, jeopardizing agents' lives for political advantage in an upcoming congressional vote on aid to the Contras.
Yeah.
Awesome, all this shit. Awesome. All of this stuff.
It would be such a different story if the Reagan administration didn't go so hard on violence, gangs, and drugs. Like, if y'all didn't go so hard about it, it wouldn't be such a gotcha. You know what I'm saying? But I'm you didn't have to create the DARE program and three strikes law. Well, they didn't create three strikes, but just all these different, just very punitive laws around drugs. Like, you ain't have to do that. And we wouldn't have even thought, it wouldn't have been so salacious.
Yeah, if Congress had not been destroying huge numbers of people because they were caught with crack cocaine at the same time as they were bringing in the raw cocaine that gets turned into crack in order to fund right-wing death squads in other parts of the world, if that all wasn't happening at the same time, it wouldn't seem like such a goddamn conspiracy.
Exactly.
Right?
If this didn't happen, we would be like, this is... Yeah, we would be like oil on our head, because of the amount of how many countries have gotten, when you add all, if this part five, so we, okay, add the countries together, the amount of countries involved in this, the amount of governments, street dudes, bureaucracies, there's nine countries involved.
Yep. It's a big deal. It's very, as we've tried to unravel, quite complicated.
Yes.
So this report that Kerry is kind of the guy running does not establish that the CIA is responsible for bringing crack to the inner cities, nor does it connect U.S. officials directly to drug dealers in the United States. However, as the report concluded, it is clear that individuals who provided support for the Contras were involved in drug trafficking. The supply network of the Contras was used by drug trafficking organizations, and elements of the Contras themselves knowingly received financial and material assistance from drug traffickers. In each case, one or another agency of the U.S. government had information regarding the involvement either while it was occurring or immediately thereafter. So, the report also quoted the chief of the CIA's Central America Task Force, who said, "With respect to drug trafficking by the resistance forces, it is not a couple of people. It is a lot of people." Now,
you can't do the bad apple, man. It's all y'all.
This is all damning because we have talked about this in the context of Iran-Contra and in the context of a bunch of other shit, years of shady dealings that we know now. But at the time, a lot of this was breaking. And at the time that report comes out, a lot of that outside information is missing, right? So most Americans who see the headlines around this, the reasonable assumption to make is some people we armed in an unpopular conflict were also moving cocaine, whatever. The subcommittee report is not big news. That sounds pretty damning. People could not give less of a shit at the time when it comes up. That's 1988. Yeah. Seven-ish years later, Gary Webb picks that thread back up, and he does about a year of digging, and he puts together this three-part article series for the Mercury, which blows the fucking lid off the world. In a couple of days after this thing drops, it becomes the biggest story in the country. And it's the first massive news story that's gone out primarily over the internet. That's where this thing spreads. And in order to kind of talk about how that happens, I want to quote now from an article in the Columbia Journalism Review. "The demographics of web traffic are unknown, but some media specialists believe that the rising numbers at Mercury Center in part reflect what the Chicago Tribune syndicated columnist Clarence Page calls an emerging black cyber consciousness. Online newsletters and other net services made the series readily available to African-American students, newspapers, radio stations, and community organizations. Patricia Turner, author of I Heard It Through the Grapevine, the definitive study on how information travels through Black America, suggests that this marked the, quote, first time the internet has electrified African-Americans in this way. The Black Telegraph, noted Jack Weil, a Time magazine columnist referring to the informal word-of-mouth network used since the days of slavery, has moved into cyberspace.
There is, I didn't know the specifics of what you're saying, but it is true. I don't know how we get information that we get. You just find out through the homies your auntie. I don't know how it happens. It just does. But I will say, when this broke, this was our uncles who were like, see there, I tried to tell y'all. You know what I'm saying? That we thought was like, all right, man, like, you know, they hadn't been to jail a few times. You know, you done read a couple books. You know, you come back and you prison smart. You know what I'm saying? So like, and prison smart is a very specific type of smart, you know? And so they got all kind of information about the government and the CIA conspired against us. And we're thinking, okay, maybe, you know, but like you said, it wasn't really big news. And it seems so far-fetched. But I have no reason to not believe my uncle. And then this happens. And it was like, that's a fact, Jack. We done tried to tell y'all, you know, and all that started happening. And it was like, damn, it turns out Unc ain't crazy. Like he, oh yep. My God, he really,
yeah.
You wasn't lying, was you, Unc? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We believed you, but it was like, I don't know, man.
Like, yeah, he's proud. Well, and it's, you know, again, one of the things people can use to discredit this is pick at like the edges of, because it is not literally the CIA was not shipping crack directly into the inner city, because that's not a very sensible way to go about doing that.
No.
Right. Just like Apple doesn't directly turn rare earth minerals into phones. Right.
Exactly.
There's a distribution network. Shit
exactly.
Happens.
But if you be like, yo, who the plug? Who's your plug? You'd be like the CIA.
Yeah.
Like, nigga, no, the government. I get the way from the government. Like, nigga, no, you don't. It's like, oh, wait, yes, you do.
It's easy to see why people see this as a very concerted conspiracy. Honestly, there's a way in which it's much more, and I'm not going to say what happened or not, because I'm sure there's more we don't. What we know is damning.
Yeah.
If it is as simple as the left hand didn't know what the right was doing, and nobody gave a shit about the impacts of these agencies and what they were doing in Latin America and how it might affect people, and nobody was watching them while people were like responding to this media circus the Time created violently by destroying huge numbers of people's lives, and that's why all this happened, which is what the facts directly suggest. That's enough to revolt over.
That's right? Already, yeah.
Like, that's enough to. I don't feel like, anyway. Let's keep telling the story, because there's more to revolt over.
Yes.
Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days, like literally.
I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad-spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50, and it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
So Gary Webb puts out this article. It moves through the Black community by way of the internet. It also, a big part of this is Black-oriented radio talk shows, which are huge today and really coming into their own in this period, the mid to late 90s, boost this phenomenon. And the way in which they spread the story is by reading out the website address on the air. Never happened before. Not a thing in mainstream that, wow. that like these big mainstream radio shows, drive time shit is like reading out is being like, you need to read this story. Here's a fucking web link, right? Dang. That's not how journalism got spread before, but it is now. These call-in programs also become a focal point of information and debate. African-American talk show hosts use their programs to address the allegations of CIA complicity in the crack epidemic. And the public response is forceful. The power of talk radio is probably like one of the best examples of like how big this is Congresswoman Maxine Waters goes on a show in Baltimore in September. And she says that the Congressional Black Caucus is going to look into this shit, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to like do a fucking thing on this. And it's fucking massive. And like the fact that Maxine Waters takes this up is like a big part of why this story blows out into the mainstream in a big way. Now, the CIA and the NSC, they're watching this shit happen, right? Yeah. They are like, everyone is on this, right? This is a massive problem. And the agency, the first public thing they do when this starts to go viral is they announce, we're doing an internal investigation. We're going to look into whether or not we did anything wrong. Like, don't worry.
Like Bush CIA is on the every case. Meeting.
Yeah.
Like, you was the vice president, cuz you was
were
there.
The vice ass president.
You were there.
And
show ass
like,
up.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So the CIA is like, we're going to look into ourselves and see if we're bad people. Don't worry. You can trust us. We're good people. obviously.
Hey, me? Did I smuggle drugs?
Yeah.
Well, me.
I don't want to speak for Black America here, but the evidence that I have suggests that this was not taken as overly comforting.
No.
I don't think I believe you, CIA.
There's a whole lot of like gas faces and just like side eyes like, okay, you going, okay. All right, here we go.
Now,
we already know though.
So the Justice Department also launches an investigation. John Deutsch, who's the director of the CIA at this point, has to go down to Watts and do a town meeting with concerned citizens to promise that his organization hadn't smuggled crack into inner cities to destroy the Black community. Like he has to actually sit down in front of
people. You gotta go to Watts.
Talk him out of this. Now, that is not precisely what Gary Webb's article had said, right? Gary Webb had not made those exact claims, right? Because what he was saying is that what we've talked about, that the CIA is making things easier for these guys who are moving cocaine into the country. And then separately, Webb's articles dealt with how the crack epidemic and things like mandatory minimums had hurt the Black community, right?
Yeah.
And how racially disparate the charging was. But a lot of people interpret it as, oh, the CIA, there's allegations that the CIA smuggled crack into the Black community. Uh-huh. And that becomes kind of the popular shorthand for the revelations.
Yeah.
Representative Cynthia McKinney calls the CIA the Central Intoxication Agency on the floor of Congress. This is a PR disaster. It is a real threat to the agency's funding. They're worried about another church committee, right? They're worried that like Congress is going to really fuck them up over this. And there's also a possibility that some people might get criminal charges who had worked for the agency. That's a thing they're concerned about because of how big a brush fire this starts.
I don't know, man. So you think they should get some criminal charges?
I might suggest if anyone belongs in prison, it's a lot of these CIA guys and Mr. Ollie North.
I'm just going to say, hold up. You should sit right next to the other drug smugglers.
So
that's what you did.
The agency spins up a reaction to what they internally call a crisis. But before they can really do anything, a savior appeared. You want to know who the savior is? You want to know who pulls the CIA's fat out of the fire?
Who is
I'll
that?
Give you a hint. It's the same people who did it in 88. It's the legacy news media.
All
See,
right.
As we've talked about.
A surprise villain here. You know what I'm saying?
Well.
Didn't see this villain coming.
Is it a surprise?
Yeah, is it a surprise given the rest of these episodes?
Or maybe it's the one we didn't expect. It's John Cena, not John Cena. It's Stone Cold coming out from the back.
Oh my God! The New York Times has a folding chair.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's who wrote. Well, it's actually the Los Angeles Times is a big part of this too. As is the anyway. Webb's, as I've talked about a bunch, Webb's story, it's the first earth-shattering piece of investigative journalism in the U.S. that came from something that wasn't a major paper of record, right? This isn't blowing up in any in like this period of time, at least. This isn't blowing up in the places it's supposed to come out of.
Yeah.
So the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, and the New York Times, three of the really the biggest legacy folks. Yeah. They're fucking angry. They're not angry because they don't want this information out. They're angry that they got fucking scooped.
They got scooped, yep.
And they're angry that in interviews, Gary Webb is saying stuff like, you don't have to be the New York Times or the Washington Post to bust a national story anymore. Now,
damn.
Gary was well ahead of the time there, because we know he's right? That's what happens. Washington Post and the New York Times, big as they are, not where a lot of shit busts anymore. A whole lot of stuff comes up from the ground these days. And oftentimes, the New York Times and the Post these days make their money kind of paying editorial writers to comment on shit. This is the start of that. And so the people who are going to like go after them, who are going to go apeshit, a lot of them are kind of editorial writers. But The Intercept does a good job of kind of summing up what happens next here in an article they wrote. Quote, newspapers like The Times and The Post seem to spend far more time trying to poke holes in the series than in following up on the underreported scandal at its heart, the involvement of a U.S.-backed proxy forces in international drug trafficking. The Los Angeles Times was especially aggressive. Scooped in its own backyard, the California paper assigned no fewer than 17 reporters to pick apart Webb's reporting. While employees denied an outright effort to attack the Mercury News, one of the 17 referred to it as the Get Gary Webb team. Another said at the time, we're going to take away that guy's Pulitzer, according to Kornbluth's CJR piece. Within 2 weeks of the publication of Dark Alliance, the LA Times devoted more words to dismantling its competitor's breakout hit than comprised the series itself.
It's just...
So they throw down.
You're just like, you're totally missing the point here, man.
You're missing the bigger story.
You're missing the bigger story here, dude.
And it is true.
Because you're salty somebody got there first.
Yeah. We have to acknowledge... Gary Webb's reporting is imperfect. Number one, any story this big, there's going to be some errors.
Of course.
But especially, Gary doesn't have a big editorial team. There's not a huge team of fact checkers. It is a newer reporter. It is a newer outlet, and there are some problems with it, right? Some of them are pretty basic errors. And these errors are not the result of him trying to cook something up or lie. They're the result of writing for a small publisher without a strong editorial team.
Yeah.
One of the examples of a fuck up that Webb did make is he never called the CIA for comment. That may sound silly, but that is a thing that you do when you are writing an article like this. You after you've got things nailed down, you go for comment. Yeah. That is when I would write articles about militias and shit, like Jason Wilson and I would wind up ringing up these fucking militia leaders and shit to ask them questions about things they'd said online. It's what you do. You give people a chance to respond when possible. You don't have to wait for them to respond to publish the article, but you do have to give them a chance to respond. Webb claims that he did reach out and they never responded. The CIA denies that he ever reached out. We just actually don't know who's telling the truth here. Mm-hmm. But the thing that he fucks up is he never writes in the story, I reached out to the CIA for comment and they didn't give it, right?
Yeah.
That is an issue. Now, a fair-minded person would say, well, that doesn't mean anything about the veracity of his reporting. It's
it has nothing to do with the rest of it.
Yeah. But the legacy papers pounce on this shit.
That sucks, man.
There are other issues as well. The specific drug dealers Webb had hung his story on absolutely did sell coke and absolutely did use proceeds from these sales to fund the Contras, but they were tiny. We're talking the guys who were directly tied to the Contras that he talks about in his story, $50,000-$60,000 they got the Contras, something like that, right? Not a lot of money. So from the guys he's focusing on in his article, there's not enough to say that the CIA or that the funding of the Contras is making a big dent on the Contras or on the crack, right? Like he's using this small case and he's assuming there's more, and he is right. There was a shitload more, but he is also kind of quoting some stuff out of context that makes his case seem stronger than it is. What he actually has is evidence that like there is something really damning here to look at. And it ties into these other fucked up things that have been done around sentencing and these other disparities. And it's possible there's a real, like, if he had, like, it's one of those things. If it were a better article, there would have been some softening of the language. A good editor would have softened some of the language. And good legacy media journalists in a responsible media environment would have seen what he was saying. Even if they'd seen, in a responsible environment, even seeing the articles that went out, they would have been like, well, what he's claiming that the CIA brought was responsible for helping to bring cocaine during the crack epidemic into the United States, what he's saying isn't entirely supported by the case of these two guys, because these guys are kind of small fry. But it's interesting that there's that much evidence, and I wonder if there's more, and they would have looked into that article that came out in 1985 and got clamped down on by the CIA, right? They would have found other stuff, including shit in that 1988 report. There was stuff they could have just found that would have been, that was already out, already reported, already something that the government had said was true, and put that with what Webb had and been like, oh shit, there's a lot here. And then they would have looked in the more, and then they would have fucking found more. That's not what the legacy media does. Instead, they pounce on the shortcomings in Webb's series. And when they start trying to tell the other side of the story, is how it gets framed, the CIA, not available for comment earlier, suddenly, yeah, we'll talk to you about this. Oh, for sure. Come on in, New York Times. You know, we love giving people access. We're the CIA. So we know about their efforts and their surprised elation at the willingness of mainstream news outlets to attack Webb out of spite, because they wrote about all of this in internal documents that are now declassified.
Yeah, they wrote shit down. There it is.
Yeah, they wrote about how happy they were about what fucking the LA Times and shit were doing in a piece called Managing a Nightmare, written by a CIA fellow named Jumovic. And I'm going to quote from The Intercept again here. The CIA watched these developments closely, collaborating where it could with outlets who wanted to challenge Webb's reporting. Media inquiries had started almost immediately following the publication of Dark Alliance, and Jumovic, in Managing a Nightmare, cites the CIA's success in discouraging one major news affiliate from covering the story. He also boasts that the agency effectively departed from its own long-standing policies in order to discredit the series. For example, in order to help a journalist working on a story that would undermine the Mercury News allegations, Public Affairs was able to deny any affiliation of a particular individual, which is a rare exception to the general policy that the CIA does not comment on any individual's alleged CIA ties.
Word.
Now, the document chronicles the shift in public opinion as it moves from like, oh my God, what has the government been doing, to in favor of the CIA's angle, which is like, nah, Gary Webb's full of shit.
Yeah.
This trend starts about a month and a half after the series is published. Quote, that third week in September was a turning point in media coverage of this story, Jumovic wrote. And he cites respected columnists, including prominent blacks, along with the New York Daily News, the Baltimore Sun, the Weekly Standard, and the Washington Post. So that's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't even need to do anything. They got it. They got the CIA's back again.
They got us. Don't even worry about it. Again, if you're on the lectern, the collective sigh of like, oh,
yeah.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
And again,
it's what these fools said. Nah.
There's a grand conspiracy and everything is connected, being like, well, okay, the CIA is doing all this shady shit to bring cocaine in. And then the New York Times plays a major role in hyping up fears of a crack epidemic, which is used to justify arresting a shitload of black men and breaking up a bunch of families. And then as soon as the allegations come out that the CIA was the one that brought in the cocaine, well, all of these same media organizations who had pushed up the crack epidemic act to crack down on the story and the journalist who had like broken the story that they'd done this. Well, yeah, that does kind of seem like a fucking conspiracy.
It
right?
really does.
Again, all of this actually, what I think all of this is a mix of different conspiracies, reckless and callous disregard for what is happening in Black America and for who gets hurt by this. Racist policing and racist trends in law enforcement. And the fact that the media is also pretty racist, always searching for like a story and do not care as much about whether or not the story is true as whether or not you can scare people.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, the fact that they mostly hire a bunch of fucking upper class white people from fancy schools who don't know anything about what's going on in the black community, who get scared by this kind of coverage and write racist bullshit, and who are always going to act to defend other dudes who went to Yale and just happened to wind up in the CIA instead of the New York Times fucking editorial desk.
For sure.
Cool stuff. Good times.
It's wonderful.
Great system.
Yeah, I think you nailed it in the sense that you have all these sort of concentric circles, these forces, you know, pressing down on the community, that whether it's police, law enforcement, you know, unfair sentencing, war on drugs, the drugs coming in, the CIA, the DEA, all these things all falling, not to mention like, you know, discriminatory housing and just all these things all happening. It's like you're anybody would think, are all these people sitting around one table and kind of deciding, yeah, you know what I'm saying? And that's when you get into the crazy, because yeah, they're not.
Is this like a plan? And like, yeah, it doesn't have to be a bunch of shit that's really bad is, yeah, the result of a bunch of different gnarly trends and conspiracy. Again, it's not that there's no conspiracies. All we've been talking about this week, yes, are conspiracies.
Yeah.
They're just not the Illuminati did.
They're
this.
Not it's one. A, yeah, it's not one, yeah, big thing, yeah, that all sprout from. It's all these, yeah, little dudes that just happen to have, yeah, overlapping, yeah, interests and
people,
and whether, yeah, it's this weird, like this weird power thing to where it's like, it's not so much I'm doing everything in my power to make sure you suffer. It's more your success don't matter to me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's like, and that's the thing that like is it's what as a, I mean, sometimes it is when you're just an out and out, you know, Nazi white supremacist to where you're like, I am doing everything in my power to make you suffer versus you're just inconsequential and your success doesn't matter to me. You're not a part of the, yeah, country I think of. You
know, and there, I mean, are some people who are like, no, I'm actually just super racist and, yeah, I run a police union that funds, you know, a number of campaigns. I want to push for mandatory minimums because I'm racist. But other people are pushing for mandatory minimums because their voters got scared by the New York Times, who did it because it was a good story and they're totally not very credible. And they're kind of racist, too. And all of this feeds together.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's continue. But first, you know what isn't a conspiracy? Prop.
Sure. Straight up plans, baby.
That's right. Not a conspiracy is the products and services that support this podcast. The products and services that support this podcast do meet around a big table, and they do secretly run the world, but they're cool, so it's fine.
They got nice shoes.
They got great shoes. Incredible shoes. Anyway,
here, Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days, like literally. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50, and it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me.
Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
Ads. We're back. We just got back from the secret table where our sponsors run the world.
Confirm sneaker game next level.
And yeah, now I want to say don't revolt and burn things down. That's don't do that. Prop, you want to take the jet skis out? I want to see if the ones that are plated gold work as well as the ones with a platinum coating on them.
Man, I think in Aspen they work best, but
well, of course,
Swiss Alps.
But not the Aspen our listeners know, the secret Aspen that exists on Mars for members of the conspiracy.
There's a Europa Aspen.
Space Aspen.
Yeah, there's a Europa Aspen that y'all don't.
Oh, that's even nicer.
So dope.
It's incredible. The fucking shrimp cocktails. Also, better shrimp than you get.
You would even vein, know.
Like the vein of poop in the shrimp that we eat, it's just gold. It's just gold instead of poop.
Delicious. But yeah, you know, burn down the system. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. We're talking about the media response to all of this shit and how they shut it down. One of the most useful papers in terms of putting the kibosh on people getting angry about Dark Alliance was the Washington Post. And I want to quote now again from the CIA. Because of the Post's national reputation, its articles especially were picked up by other papers, helping to create what the Associated Press called a firestorm of reaction against the San Jose Mercury News. Now, about a month or so after... Yeah, of this follows kind of critical media coverage of the series. Uh-huh. And by the end of that first month, the quote unquote balanced reporting, just attacking Gary Webb and his article, outnumbers the stories that are actually taking what he's talking about seriously. Mm-hmm. And in their write-up of this, the CIA credits all of this to the Washington Post, the New York Times, quote, and especially the Los Angeles Times. Webb's editors start to distance themselves and abandon their reporter. By the end of October, 2 months after the publication of Dark Alliance, quote, the tone of the entire CIA drug story had changed. Jumovic was pleased to report, quote, most press coverage included as a routine matter the now widespread criticism of the Mercury News allegations.
I can bet. Now, I wasn't an adult during this time, but I can bet that the tone among whatever plugged in or tapped in, like black people in this professional space that would be knowing all this stuff, is like, you know, this is all the confirmation we need. Mm-hmm. The fact that you going after this man so much, it makes us be like, oh, so he's right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, got it. Thanks, guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Word.
Thank you for clarifying.
I was wondering, but now that y'all going through all this to stop him, now I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is how a lot of people react. And we have now learned to a point of certainty with all of the stuff that's come out since, that's been declassified, that's been reported on. Gary Webb was right. The claim that he made was that the CIA deliberately enabled the cocaine trade to fund the Contras. That was absolutely true. His central thesis, his central thing that he was trying to show was real. Now, he didn't have all of the information that we have in order to prove it. And that is a flaw in the article.
Yeah.
But all of the journalism, quote unquote journalism, that was done to attack Webb's work was deeply flawed itself, as the Columbia Journalism Review makes clear. All three papers ignored evidence from declassified National Security Council email messages, and the New York Times and the Washington Post ignored evidence from Oliver North's notebooks, which lends support to the underlying premise of the Mercury News series, that U.S. officials would both condone and protect drug traffickers if doing so advanced the Contra cause. The October 21st New York Times piece didn't even mention the Kerry Committee report. A decade ago, the national media lowballed the Contra drug story, David Korn observed in The Nation. Now it's been there, done that. On October 23rd, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence held its first hearing on the controversy surrounding the new Contra drug allegations. Jack Bloom, former lead investigator for the Kerry Committee, was lead witness. Bloom testified that his investigators had found no evidence whatsoever that the African-American community was a particular target of a plot to sell crack cocaine, or that high U.S. officials had a policy of supporting the Contras through drug sales, which is not what Webb had alleged, right? Yeah. Webb does not allege a plot. Webb says that the CIA is helping Koch move into the country, which is true.
Yes.
And Bloom testifies further, quote, if you ask whether the United States government ignored the drug problem and subverted law enforcement to prevent embarrassment and to reward our allies in the Contra War, the answer is yes. Which you might recognize as saying Gary Webb was right.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, the CIA found, of course, no intent to smuggle cocaine into the United States or to enable drug smugglers to do the same. Instead, they blamed all the extremely documented cases of Contras smuggling coke into the U.S. as something all their agents had just missed because, like, gee shucks, the CIA forgot to mandate that CIA agents had to report evidence of drug smuggling by their contacts. Right? That's literally the excuse. Like, well, they missed it because they weren't told to report it, so they just didn't notice it. They just missed all this blow, right? Because it wasn't their job to spot it, right?
Listen, like I said, I'm here for the lobsters. I'm not here for the beef. Okay.
Yeah, I don't even see those cows.
I don't even see those. I don't even see what you're talking about. Yeah. I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm here for this. Yeah.
I'm going to quote from PBS again. In the winter of 1982, as the United States was plotting how to overthrow the Sandinista government that came to power in Nicaragua, a letter, a Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, was being drafted in Washington, D.C. The presumptive author was the U.S. Attorney General, the late William French Smith. The recipient was the Central Intelligence Agency Director William Casey. The subject was a list of offenses that CIA field officers in the field were required to report if they witnessed or became aware of a crime, particularly if it involved an informant or someone the CIA officer wanted to recruit as an agent. The letter of understanding listed all kinds of crimes, from murder to passport fraud, but it omitted narcotics violations.
Because we know.
Yeah, if he's killing people, we want to know, but if he's moving blow into the country, we don't really give a shit. That's what it's saying, right?
Yeah.
Now, this is too glaring of an oversight to have left without comment, and weeks later there's a follow-up letter based on internal discussion in the Justice Department that gets sent to the CIA. Quote, I have been advised that a question arose regarding the need to add all narcotics violations to the list of non-employee claims. This is something Smith writes to Casey in 1982, February. So, you know, that sounds good, but this actually doesn't add drugs to the list of things that have to be reported. Because Smith, instead of adding it to the list, just cites existing federal policy on narcotics enforcement and writes, quote, in light of these provisions and in view of the fine cooperation of the Drug Enforcement Administration has received from the CIA, no formal requirement regarding the reporting of narcotics violations has been included in these procedures. So basically, we're already working so good together. Federal employees are already required to talk about this stuff.
You know?
So we don't need to add, we can keep narcotics exempted from the things CIA agents have to report because we know they will, right?
Yeah.
Which we know they weren't.
Yeah.
Now, Inspector General Fred Hitz tells the PBS when he's questioned that, because they're asking, like, what do you make of this, CIA Inspector General? It seems shady. And he's like, well, it's at best a mixed message, right? That's a mixed message. Yeah, it's mixed.
These dudes may not be good at criming, but they are good at excuses.
They're incredible at excuses.
Yeah.
And Hitz,
their what had happened was game is ridiculous.
And it Hitz very, this is very funny, claims that he, to PBS, he doesn't believe CIA agents would have enabled drug traffic to allow the Contras to fund themselves because that would have been bad PR. Now, you and I know, Prop, that the Reagan administration and the CIA actively worked to discredit journalists reporting on the CIA for doing just that.
Yes.
When the agency took any action to crack down on the drug trade, it was purely for show. In 1987, acting CIA Director Robert Gates sent a memorandum to the CIA Deputy Director demanding that CIA officers cease relationships with Contras even suspected of trafficking narcotics. Here's PBS again. Gates's memorandum instructed George to vet names of air crews, air services companies, and subcontractors with the DEA, U.S. Customs, and the FBI to ensure that none of the contractors used by the CIA were involved in narcotics. For some reason, this memorandum, quote, was not issued in any form that would advise agency employees generally of this policy, Hitz stated in his report. It never got to the field agents who were supposed to use it as a guide. So Hitz is like, look, we recognized the problem, and we made it a rule that they had to run everything by the FBI and the DEA. They had to check on these guys and vet them to make sure they're not moving drugs. We noticed there was a problem, and we took action. Well, did you tell anyone whose job it was to vet these people that they had to do that? Well, no, we forgot to.
I love it. We fucked
that one up. We really fucked that one up. Oopsie doodles,
hey,
you know?
Hey, homie, that's clerical, bro. Mm-hmm. Listen. Charges to my head, not my heart. You know what I'm saying?
Not a big deal. We tried to do the right thing. It just got fucked up for reasons that were completely unavoidable.
Guys, you're looking at the locker room. Guys, listen. When the team comes in, just make sure they know that they got to stop grabbing asses, okay?
Yeah.
You got to stop grabbing asses, guys. Look, everybody's mad at us. So when you see a juicy ass, you can't grab it, okay? All right? All right, here come the guys. It's just silence.
Yeah, we don't need to say any more than that.
I said it.
I said it at some point. It's in the book.
You guys saw me say it.
We put it in the rule book. Now, they're not required to read the rule book. In fact, they're not allowed to. We didn't give it to them. The rule books are held on the top of a mountain in eastern fucking Turkmenistan, and none of them can get to it. But it's in the rule book, you know?
Yes. What else do you want for us? You want me to track down these agents and put a paper in their hands?
Yeah.
I told them they can't do it, man.
Yeah. They're honorable men, you know? They won't do
it. They're going to do it anyway.
Yeah. So, as the years have gone on and all this has come out, it has become clear that Gary Webb was guilty of being sloppy, right? It's not perfect or even ideal reporting. There's issues with it. His conclusions and allegations, while not supported by the text of his article, though, are supported by the facts that we know now and the facts that have emerged since, and a number of the facts that Gary didn't bring up, but were available then, and that the Washington Post and the New York Times and the LA Times should have brought up, like the shit from the Kerry report, like the shit from the AP report in 85.
Yes.
Of course, the fact that Gary has been vindicated by Time did not mean anything for Gary Webb. The damage had been done to his career. He was disgraced, and the CIA crack epidemic story had gone from a mainstream outrage to a conspiracy theory that was widely mocked. The Washington Post even published, one of the things they do in this period, is they put out an article, like a warning about the black community's susceptibility to conspiracy theories. Whereas the Washington Post, we gotta let you know, we've noticed a troubling trend, which is black people are sharing conspiracy theories.
Well, look, you got
that's not a good look.
Mm-hmm. You gotta watch what you say around them, because, you know, they, they kind of believe anything.
Mm-hmm. They really think the whole government's out to get them. And the media. What a silly group of people.
Yeah. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
I mean, what evidence do they have that that might be happening?
Yeah. It's like fucking hitting your friend in the head with a hammer and being like, yeah, he's real susceptible to getting hit in the head with a hammer. Boy, that guy's head can't stop catching hammers. Am I right?
Amen.
Jesus.
Jeez. Can't do anything around this guy, man. Might get a hammer to his head.
Can't bring a hammer out. He keeps getting hit with them.
Yeah.
Webb's career never recovered. On December 10th, 2004, he shot himself in the head with a 38.
Oh my God.
10 years later, David Carr, writing for the New York Times, wrote an article that serves as the closest we'll get to an apology from the Gray Lady. We've quoted from it a couple of times here. There's widespread recognition that it was pretty fucked up, although you can still find articles in mainstream says, Gary Webb was really fucked up, and like, we weren't wrong to go after him and to ignore all of these problems and act as cover for the CIA.
Yeah.
Like, it's all fucked up, Prop, but that's the story. That's all the story.
Oh, man. So, it was like seven countries involved, mad moving parts, people at the highest level of government. A journalist breaks it, tells the truth, pokes his head up. The rest of the journalism community goes,
to
no,
suicide.
It's not. And then the dude, and then the dude kills himself because he makes him feel like he's taking crazy pills.
It's one of those things. There's a meme spreading around that's like the award, the CIA award for excellence in journalism, and it's a bullet. Yeah. And that is an accurate joke in like parts of Latin America, right? Because in Latin America, the CIA either directly did or through there. And in other parts of the world, the CIA has assassinated a lot of journalists. They don't have to do that. You don't have to send a guy with a silenced weapon kill Gary Webb.
Yeah.
New York Times has got your back. They're just going to hound him to suicide because they got scooped. We're good, baby.
Damn.
Saves us the bullet money.
I didn't know that one, because Bud McFarlane killed himself too.
He sure did. And I'm sure there's, I don't want to get into other, it's totally understandable if you're feeling conspiratorial after this. And I'm not going to say much more than that, because it's cool and fine.
Yeah.
Prop, you got anything to plug?
Well, this has been a phenomenal piece of art we've put together so hop over to Hood Politics Pod, man, you know, where hopefully if you at part 5 of this one, you know that the pieces that this was all together. This was, how come I can't talk? You done worn me out. And this was my idea to do this series. And you done worn me out. Hood Politics Pod. And
what upcoming topics do you have on Hood Politics?
Oh man, besides the other parts of this, I have did we talk about the Queen already? We already talked about the Queen. We got tapping in or it's up, like lessons on how you need to tap in before you talk to people. I got a book reading list where we can get your weight up, talk about a little bit of things like that. Yeah, it's a lot going on over there.
Check out Hood Politics and get Props Cold Brew, Terraform.
Ooh, get my cold brew.
And his book, Terraform.
Yes, it's all there.
There's a pattern.
There. Yeah, and the
your
music.
New
music. Yeah, all named Terraform because.
What's your website again? Is it prophiphop.com?
Yes, it is. Thank you, Sophie.
Prophiphop.com for all the things.
Prophiphop.com. Terraform. Check it all out. You can find me with my novel, which you should read, called After the Revolution.
Yeah.
You go to any place that sells books, any website that sells books, type it in, After the Revolution. You can buy a copy.
The homie,
ebooks, paperback, all that. You can also type in After the Revolution, AK Books, and you'll find it there.
Talk to the homie Skullfucker Mike.
Yeah, you can learn the Ballad of Skullfucker Mike. And more to come in the sequel.
He needs Skullfucker needs his own
side
story.
You're going to learn a lot more about Skullfucker Mike.
All right.
But let's all fuck our own skulls right now to chill out after being sad. Thank you, Prof. What a great week.
Yes.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.